Welcome to this episode of Becoming an Elite Financial Advisor. I'm Sten Morgan. Today we're going to hang out with Julia, one of the top female advisors in the country. I have a special connection with her. She's in Oregon. I grew up in Oregon, but I love her practice. I met her at the Alex Hormozi event in Vegas, and we connected, talked shop. And so today I want you to get an understanding of some of her journey, also some of the specific things she's done within her practice. But I hope that you hear there was struggle in her story. And there's no straight line, easy path in this business, but she stuck with it. She was creative. She kept learning. She learned how to become a better leader, a better communicator. And we will get some great insights from Julia. Julia, thanks for being here. We met at the Alex Hormozi event in Vegas, which is a very challenging event. So I'd love to talk more about that when we get a chance, but I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, it was great to meet you and fun to see how many people we knew, it was separately and then all in the same world.
I know. Yeah. Whenever I hear somebody that lives in Oregon or is from Oregon, I feel like a bond because it's like you get it.
Yeah. Yes.
So if you can give kind of quick background, you're a very successful advisor, a lot of awards over the years, built a successful practice to this point. I've even gotten to other things as well. But if you can kind of give us your quick get, how'd you get into the business and what's the journey been like?
Sure. Yeah. So this has been my only career. I like to say that I got licensed before I could drink legally. So when I was 20, I was working for a bank in their investment department and was a registered assistant and just fell in love with the industry. My parents have a very healthy money story, which now knowing that is not common. And then also my grandfather taught me about stocks. And so it was just been a really fun journey to now be able to take that into helping our clients' lives over the years. So I left the bank when I was 23 because I was like, all right, I'm ready to serve clients and be a financial advisor. And there wasn't that opportunity at the bank. They said, great, as soon as the advisor you support leaves, you can have that position. Well, that would have been like 15 years. So I decided to, at 23, leave the bank and kind of went with like a semi-independent insurance company where I was, pretty captive under their umbrella. And that lasted until about 2009 and the Great Recession. And I thought, man, I have been like blinders on kind of in this lane of insurance products, which didn't work out well when clients needed their money in 2008, 2009. And so I thought, I really have to essentially go back to school and learn about financial planning and find a home where I could be really independent and really do what's right for the client and understand all of those ways that we can serve our clients. And yeah. So I left in 2009 and started just independently. So
nice.
Here I am now.
And have you always been in Oregon?
I moved to Oregon when I was 18, when I met my husband. I grew up in Seattle area but for my whole adult life, yes.
Nice. Yeah. Where in that journey did you become a business owner versus
advisor/salesperson? Yeah, that's a really good question. So I would say in 2009, I had like a part-time assistant, but I always knew like I wanted to build something. And so I think it was probably in 2013 when I had probably three other employees. I felt like I was on top of the world. I was successful. I was like serving our clients. We were making it. And I was at a client event. And just at the end of the night, I learned that my daughter was in a serious accident. And that's when I realized that I didn't really have a true business. I realized that my business was totally dependent on me at that point. And so I wanted to be there with my daughter and help her recover, which she did. But at the same point, I had to figure out how do I build something that can survive without me, that where I can be less relevant, that I, so I like to say I fired myself. I figured out how to fire myself. Yeah. And then went on, that was the journey. So in 2013, I went on to start hiring other advisors, really being putting structure in the business. And it probably wasn't until 2017 that I could like take a true vacation and not be, you know, not get emails, not get constant interruptions, not have to sign things. And so now with that full structure in place, I have that freedom to really like do other passion projects. And like I'm writing another book and I can be on this podcast, like all the fun stuff that I really enjoy too.
I think when I hang out with a lot of advisors, and I'm thankful that I get to do some coaching, speaking stuff, because you just get exposed to so many practices. And I think I can fairly say, here's what most people are doing. And then here's maybe what a smaller group is doing. And most advisors say they want what the smaller group has, which is, I want autonomy. I don't want to create a really like high paid, but like low freedom job for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires, you know, learning how to lead people, adding structures and systems to your business. There are probably advisors that say, all I want is this to be a really high paying job for myself. And I'm just going to take all the profit from the business and create a really nice lifestyle. But when you sit with somebody, I think there's some tension, because they really want what you're talking about, which is, hey, someday I'd like a business, not only that doesn't burn down when I'm gone, but can actually thrive in my absence. What was that journey like for you from, hey, I can leave for a week and the world doesn't come to an end, to I think where it is now, where it's like, no, this is a healthy business apart from me?
Yeah. So I feel like it's, I think as advisors, there's like, there's two things we have to decide. What do you want to build? Do you want to build like a boutique firm that is serving those clients and it is a great lifestyle? Or are you going all in and wanting to build something that is like that empire, is something that's going to last? And so it's really, I think for me, that's always kind of how I've been wired, is like, I didn't want to coast. I didn't want to just help 100 clients. Like I was on a crusade to really help others find that financial independence. And it wasn't by going after, you know, the people that already had the money. Like I had the passion to want to help people that weren't wealthy become wealthy. Yeah. And so that, and I'm not going to be able to do that by myself. And so it was really that, I think it's kind of always how I have been wired, is I like to say I'm an entrepreneur first. It just happens to be in the financial advisory world that I love.
Nice.
Yeah.
I do think, as I've kind of gone through my journey, I think there's maybe a period of time where I was like, no, there is one right way to do it. Become a business owner, entrepreneur, grow a practice. And I've realized, I think it's okay if you're listening to this podcast and you say, no, Sten, Julia, truly, I just want a practice with one or two advisors, a healthy staff, and I want to serve a certain amount of people. But you need to be convicted and stick with that path. I think if you're deviating constantly, and I know when I consult business owners now, one of my first questions is, are you building this to keep it or sell it?
Yeah.
Because I think you make different decisions. And so for everybody listening, you know, whatever you decide today, it doesn't have to be in stone, but have an idea. Are you trying to grow an enterprise, an organization? Because that requires different risk and different choices. Or do you want to be intentional and grow a smaller, super healthy, super profitable business? So I think both are okay, for depending on the person.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's not, exactly right, there's not a right or wrong way, but you do have to know what you're building. And that can change, right? Like over time, like at first it was, okay, I just want to be successful. I just want to make money. And we are all things to all people. Like that's really, it was like, let's go. And then it was like, okay, you get to a place where you're growing so rapidly, and then you have to, you know, put in the foundation and the structure. And that's a lot of time where people, it's like that first the plateau part is $1 million, like $1 million in revenue. You're really thinking, okay, do I want to keep going? If I do keep going, I have to invest back in the business. I have to like be a manager now and as an advisor. And And you probably will make more money at, you know, $1 million in revenue than you do. Like, I think it's probably jumping until about 3 million is probably the next plateau point where it was like, oh man, I'm hustling. I'm working hard. I'm hiring people. Because it was like you were reinvesting back in the business. I mean, that's how it felt for me. And then I could be like, okay, I think it's going to be okay. But that's a commitment. And yeah. And so it definitely is an intentional build if that's what you want to do. So,
yeah. If you would, because I know you wouldn't just share this off the bat on your own, the accolades you've received, Forbes top woman advisor, if you can give just a high level of those real quick, just so everybody listening knows.
Okay. Yeah. So Forbes top women advisor, top, what is it? Best in state. I think,
yeah.
I can't remember, but I was either number four or number two last year. So that was pretty cool get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I just made the Barron's list. So that was really fun too.
I love that.
Yeah, it was, I, back in the day, they didn't have Forbes. So it was just Barron's. And I put on my vision board. I'm not the top 100 women yet. That's next still bit. On my radar, but yeah, but I did put like, you know, a top Barron's advisor. And, you know, it's interesting because back in the day I was like, oh, to make these lists would be so great. And now that I'm here, you know, it's great. Yes, it feels good, but it's also like a reflection of my whole team. Like I couldn't be where I'm at without the help and the structure of the people that I've hired that are on, you know, on this vision that hold this vision with me. So it's really a team sport.
Yeah. And that list is longer, but I appreciate you sharing a few of them because.
All right. Yeah. There's some more in there.
For everybody listening, like Julie, she knows what she's doing. She's, it hasn't been a direct straight line with no challenges like any business, but well done.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's been fun. I've learned a lot and it's now to be able to give back to other business owners, like we're developing a way that we help businesses. And at first I was thinking much like you, is it like to help other advisors or is it to help business owners? And I actually, much to our conversation, Sten, was like, nope, I think this offering is just generic to business owners. And because I think that all the lessons that we learn along our journey, if I can help someone else shortcut it and say, oh no, this is normal, you're gonna feel this, or you're going to be reinvesting, and create those shortcuts for them, then that makes me happy.
Yeah. The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you. Shifting Alex Hormozi event. What were some of your takeaways? One that came to my mind when you were talking earlier is kind of some of these plateaus. And I think the way they put it was, if you're under $1 million of revenue, you just need to sell more and have a better product. Like, don't worry about anything else. Once you hit $1 million, I think this is true for advisors. I think that opens you up to say, okay, now what do I do next? I have revenue, I have profit. How can I reinvest it? I think they said it from 1 to 3, you need people. Like, you have to grow a team at that point. And then from 3 to 5, it was leadership. Like, you have to get other kind of drivers, entrepreneurs to help you. And I think over that, it was, you just need better, like higher quality people.
Yeah. Yes. I'm glad that you framed it that way. That's really good. And knowing like we'll be at 5.5-6 million in revenue. And those are the things that actually I think about now, right? It's, how do I develop myself as a leader? How do I become better? How do I lead better? And then also, do I give up control more and more every day to my executive team, to the people that are leading people? And I think as you grow as a business owner, you are going to fall into more of, do you want to be more of the manager or do you want to be more of that visionary leader? And I think that's really important to know thyself and to understand how you're wired, and that most likely will be very natural to you. So, and also what gives you energy. And so for me, identifying, I don't want to be the people manager. I don't want to, I don't want to have so many appointments every week. And so I was very regimented in how do I find people that are opposite my strengths? And those are the people in our executive team that then, and the more that I can hand over control to them, the easier my life gets. And the more that I can just play in the creativity and the visionary and building those big relationships. And they are empowered. You know, I like to say I'm in charge, but I don't have to control everything.
Nice.
And that's a really good feeling. And it actually elevates the other people in your organization.
I do think for anybody listening, if you do want to move beyond you and maybe an assistant and just creating a decent income for yourself, like it will require people. And at times, I mean, sometimes people are the heaviest part of being an entrepreneur because team members bring stuff to work. You know, sometimes they aren't good at receiving accountability and maybe you're not great at giving it. And so I do find myself spending a good amount of time growing in that, you know, coaching people in that because, you know, one good team member, one great hire is a force multiplier, I believe. In my journey as an advisor, and I look back and some of the stuff I coach, is I'm pretty convicted now that communication should be a superpower for every advisor. Like your ability to convince and connect with somebody is so important to create urgency for them to take action. What in your story along the way have you said this was a superpower I had to develop? Was it hiring good people? Was it leading better? Was it innovating? What's one of your main skills?
Yeah, I would say it's the it was the ability to let go. I laugh because I do call it firing myself, and I constantly fire myself from things. And so it's that like I do have that quick trust. Like I am one to naturally trust someone, and so that actually allowed me to let go even more. But I would say it's also being generous of, you know, like seeing the good in people, and even with our clients, like, you know, being generous with how we're serving them and loving on them. And it's just that when you do good, you know, that good is reflects back. So I feel like it's probably the mindset that I've had as a leader, as I've grown, and knowing that I don't have all the answers, but I'm always like willing, like Hormozy, like I love his stuff. I'm like, oh, I want to go be in his world. Like I never want to stop learning. So it's that curiosity that like you can always do better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have seasons as you were growing your company and hiring people that you got maybe a little more pessimistic? I know I've had seasons where I'm like, oh my goodness, there's no good people out there. Nobody wants to work hard. They all just want to make a lot of money. And I realize that does come out and that does affect culture if you're this, you know, somewhat of a cloud hanging over you all the time where you're, but when you say optimism, generosity, how is that so natural to you that no matter what's going on around you, that flows? Or do you have to really like channel that intentionally?
Yeah, I feel so. I would say I'm naturally optimistic, but absolutely there's limiting beliefs that I had. So I live in a very rural town. Like the town I live in is about 2,000. Where my office is at, there's 10,000. And so when I started my business, I'm like, how am I ever going to build a big business in this small town? Right. And that was actually a very limiting belief for me. And I could choose to believe it, or I could just follow the breadcrumbs, if you will, and know that like something's going to open up. And it did. And now we have 4 offices all over Oregon. And so, and that was the way that we could grow. but probably over half our business comes from this little small town on the Oregon coast. And wow. So it's our beliefs are so powerful, and they impact our thoughts, they impact our actions, they impact so much. And so another limiting belief is like, oh, I'm not going to find the right people in this small town to help. But then the right mindset is, I have an amazing opportunity for the right people that I can offer them. Like, you know, the compensation, the benefits, the learning, like when you learn financial stuff, like it changes people's lives when they can apply that to their family. And so it's like, for sure you get caught up in you know, negative or limiting beliefs, but it's that, I think that's why I'm so addicted to the investing in myself and going to things like Hormozy and reading books, and because I know that that changes who I am, and I know that exposes the beliefs that I have that don't serve me. So it's that constant like self-reflection, you know, thinking about my thinking, and then, oh, okay, catching myself when I'm thinking something that doesn't serve me.
Yeah. So for all the advisors listening that want to be at your level someday, really practically, as you look back, you've unlocked some things along the way that led to more growth. What are some of those things from like a practical standpoint? Maybe it's even like a knowledge. Here's how we deliver our advice efficiently. Here's how we prospect. If you can give us like a peek into your practice.
Yes. And I feel I'll do that along with the takeaway from Hormozy, because I feel like it's like you can go to an event. We all go to conferences, industry conferences, listen to podcasts, read books, go all of that. But if you don't actually implement, you're not going to move forward. So for me, I've always thought about, okay, what's the one thing that I can take from this event, and then focus on it, like put blinders on and focus, you know, for the next 90 days so that we can implement this one idea. So for me, like when we came back from Hormozy, I was like, okay, the constraint, he talks a lot about constraints in your business. Like, what is the one thing that has the domino effect for other things? And for us, we're trying to hack, if you will, the organic prospecting from bringing clients in that are cold. So maybe on Facebook, on social media platforms, how do we engage in a way on those platforms for them to come into our world and then naturally expose them to who we are as a company, our core values, how we treat our clients, our services. And so it's like building that journey. We're constantly, you know, looking at that and fine tuning it. And so in their marketing, I kind of like zoned in on one area that we run webinars for prospects. And so it's like dialing that in. So it's such a streamlined process that we're naturally attracting the right people to us that we want to be doing business with. And so again, that's like a 90-day focus, and the whole team goes to work on those issues until they're solved. And so, and when I think back on our success, that's really the what we've done with, like, we're EOS, like we run EOS, and it's like those 90-day rocks, if you will, where our whole executive team focuses and goes to work. And gosh, when you zoom out and look at the momentum of running a business with that framework, you get stuff done like quickly.
Yeah. How have you, I know we have a few more minutes here, really practically, what would you tell another advisor, you know, you've tried things this way and it actually worked this way? A lot of advisors are like, I need to grow. I need to get consistent. Prospecting is forever going to be a topic of conversation for advisors. With everything you've tried and learned, what's some advice around prospecting that you would give to advisors?
Yeah, I think nothing beats like the good old like networking in your community, doing something you love. So that could be like, for me, I was part of Rotary, I was part of Chamber, I was part of serving on boards. I still serve on boards that that are in my community. So it's like, I'm going to lunch with people. I'm in meetings with people. I'm doing things. I'm helping our community. So I would say if you have not hacked your own community, start there.
Yeah.
Because that is like low hanging fruit where, again, it goes back to like, we genuinely want to help people in our business. Like we want to solve problems. And so, and it's not that I'm out there as a financial advisor. I'm out there as a problem solver. I'm out there having conversations. So I think level one is like your own community. Sometimes I think we think, oh, it's easier to go on social when of people I don't know. But that's like, that takes a lot of time, a lot of resources, a lot of team, a lot of money. So I think level one is like, do you have that organic market right around you that is your community? So like, we have people walk into our office and want to do business.
Nice.
Like it's crazy. So especially if you're in a small community, it's like prosper where you're planted first for marketing and then start layering. For us now, it's like, okay, now we have a bigger team. We can go cast a wider net, but still doing that in like, we're really specific in our campaigns. Like we are that retirement planning specialist if you're, you know, 2 to 5 years out from retirement. Or like what I'm working on now is like, we are the advisor to entrepreneurs. And so we have a whole, you know, we're developing a whole plan, you know, like a unique way to serve those clients. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like, don't be all things to all people, but really specific in when you do your marketing.
I love that. Yeah. I appreciate that clarification. Cause I remember when I first heard about niches as a young advisor, I was like, oh, now I have to go work with dentists only. And I'm like, they have a lot of the same problems, entrepreneur, you know, business owners, whether the business is, you know, dentistry or construction. But I do think from a marketing standpoint, you have to be specific with your language to attract them. But that doesn't, so you can niche in your marketing language, but that doesn't mean your firm has to only serve, you know, dentists in 20 minutes right around me. Like, cause I think sometimes for a young advisor, it's like, I may not get enough momentum or scale in that market fast enough to be successful. But you can't just cast this general net with your language because then you're catching nobody's attention.
Yeah, you're competing with Fidelity at that point, right?
Yeah.
Where, because Fidelity is not niching down their marketing. So if you niche down your marketing, that's how you compete. So absolutely. And again, like it's like what you shared, your first million of revenue, you just want to go all in,
just
right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Just what works.
you can help as many people as you can.
Yeah.
One thing I get challenged sometimes with advisors we coach or I'll speak at an event is they're like, oh, my heart is to help college students or, you know, single moms is something our firm does. That's part of my story. But what's tough is there's no mission without margin, meaning like if it's not a business plan that can actually generate enough revenue for you to stay in business, even though it sounds good, it might not be the great path. Instead, what if you help people that need your help now that are willing to pay for it, and then someday you hire a financial planner on salary and all they do is give free financial plans to single moms? I think sometimes like don't let your mission get in the way of running a great business because I think you can do both.
Yeah. Yeah. Or actually say we're providing free advice, like, you know, 5-10 hours a month to, you know, single moms or to college kids. Like, that can be part of your mission, but it's not like, don't think you're going to make money that way.
Yeah. That's good.
So it's like, we all want to help people. I mean, that's very much rooted in who I am and all of that. And I think that would have been something like if you had $50 when I started my business, I would have helped you invest. I'd have been like, let's set up $50 a month. Let's go. But here's the other cool thing. Those stories, like that actually, that client that I'm thinking about now has $1 million with us.
Oh, yeah.
We set up a $2,000 Roth IRA. Now he's in the NFL and has millions. So it's like, you see those stories over and over in our business. But, you know, that's a very long game to play. And
yes,
so
yes, it will happen.
The way I like to think of, yeah, yeah. The way I like to think about it is We don't have a minimum asset level, but we do have a minimum revenue level. So if you do want to work with us, you do want our advice, then you need to pay for planning, you need to pay for coaching, or we need to get our revenue from assets that you manage. So we want to help people that want to be helped, but they have to want to help themselves, which is means paying for the service.
Yep. That's a great way to end. Julia, thank you so much for taking the time. Keep up all the good work. I want to be like you.
You already are. You're doing great work in the world.
Thank you.